Case number 25178, Joan Wesser versus Kimberly Goodson et al. 15 minutes for the plaintiff, 15 minutes to be shared by defendants. Mr. Alleman, you may proceed for the appellant.
Thank you. Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Peter Alleman. I am from Madisonville, Tennessee, and I represent Ms. Wesser. This is a case today about a law enforcement officer who was willing to violate clear state law, and we say federal law, in order to arrest Ms. Wesser because she returned cats to the possession of the owner on the day designated by the owner to return the cats. The district court granted summary judgment to the officer and to Ms. Goodson, finding that no reasonable juror could rule for a return of verdict for the plaintiff. In doing this, we think the district court ignored well-established summary judgment law as well as Fourth Amendment probable cause law. Probable cause, as you know, is based on the officer having reliable, trustworthy information. In this case, we say the record is clear that the officer did not perform an appropriate investigation to establish reliable and trustworthy information. Hence, he was not able to exercise reasonable judgment in coming to a decision regarding probable cause. Now, we have cited in our brief a couple of cases regarding probable cause, but they basically boil down to what the Supreme Court said in Rochin versus Ward, and the Seventh Circuit said in Moore versus Marketplace that an officer has to use common sense in reaching a conclusion regarding probable cause. The Seventh Circuit said it best, I think, the use of common sense is a prerequisite to police officers in developing their investigation in order to effectuate a valid arrest. In this case, we think there are three important cases that Your Honor should look at specifically, two Sixth Circuit cases and a Seventh Circuit case. Gardenshire versus Schubert, 205 F3rd 303. Radbansky versus Olmsted Falls, 395 F3rd 291. And Moore versus the Marketplace Restaurant, 745 F2nd 1336. There are common factors in those cases and in our case that I think are important. First of all, there were no exigent circumstances. Secondly, these were warrantless arrests. Thirdly, and most importantly, the reliability and trustworthiness of the information that the officer obtained prior to making the arrest. And one of the most important factors in looking at these cases is and as the Gardenshire and the Radvansky cases recognize, when you've got disputes between interested parties, you should not be able to just take their word without looking at more.
But excuse me, your client admitted, didn't she, that she had left the crate of cats in Goodson's driveway?
She did, Judge Gilman.
Well, I mean,
no question of it.
And that probable cause right there. To believe he committed criminal trespass.
No, it's not. Not under the facts of this case, and let me tell you why. In Tennessee, in order to trespass, a person has to have unambiguous notice that if they step onto property, they're trespassing. Number one, we're lucky in a sense because we have Facebook message posts. That was the conversation, the extent of the conversation. Nowhere in that conversation, what you get is a back and forth about, I'm bringing the cats over to you. No, don't bring the cats over. I'm bringing the cats to you. No, don't bring the cats over. That's all you have. Never does Ms. Goodson tell Ms. Wesser, do not set foot on my property. If you look at our statute, DCA 3914405, it lays out what's required, but then you go down to subsection C, and it basically says what notice is. If I haven't told you specifically do not set foot on my property, you've either got to have a posting that says no trespass, or if you're a large tract of property, you have a post that says no trespass. It's called a major sign. And then you go by along the boundaries and put purple paint splashes on posts or trees. But without specific notice, without unambiguous notice, all we have is a discussion about whether you're going to bring cats back or not.
But aren't you talking about now, you're talking about the substantive violation of Tennessee law, and probable cause is a standard that does not require an actual criminal violation, a police officer to have like evidence that would be sufficient at trial to prove a case. So I think the police officer just has to have a reasonable basis that the unwelcomeness of the encounter existed, that element of the crime. And so why couldn't the officer Anderson here have that just from talking with Goodson, who said, as I understand it, how it played out, talked to Goodson and said, I didn't want her to come here. I didn't want these cats here. Why isn't that sufficient basis for showing a lack of unwelcomeness or lack of welcomeness?
Well, I don't think a lack of welcomeness is the test, Judge Murphy. I think that you've got to give a person notice. I mean, this is a criminal statute. And I think you've got to give the person who you say is trespassing notice. That notice, it does not appear to us, was ever given. Now, was there a dispute about whether she should bring the cats or not? You've got to remember, these are Miss Goodson's cats. They are not Miss Wesser's cats. They are Miss Goodson's cats. And Miss Goodson had been leaving them in the farmhouse that was owned by Miss Wesser rent-free so that she could get them adopted out over time. Miss Goodson had created a situation where she had taken food and supplies from the farmhouse, but left the cats for Miss Wesser to care for. The supplies were running low. Miss Wesser received a letter saying, return the cats to my possession. And as she established a procedure, she had appointed a Miss Burgett for Miss Wesser to contact to arrange a pickup for the cats. Miss Burgett said, no, I can't pick these cats up on the 7th. That was the only day that Miss Wesser had available to return the cats.
It was Mr. Allison,
yes, sir.
I'm struggling to understand how the United States Constitution regulates the particulars of this dispute about cats in a driveway. Can you explain to me how we translate this conversation about who said what regarding the cats in particulars of Tennessee law into a claim governed by the United States Constitution?
Yes, Judge Kepler, thank you for asking that question. This is the case where a law enforcement officer arrested a citizen based upon at most reasonable suspicion and not probable cause. I mean, in the big scheme of things, I suppose it's not the biggest case in the world for anybody other than Miss Wesser and Miss Goodson and the officer. But in the big scheme of things too, the principle is the same, whether it's an arrest for criminal trespass, a Class C misdemeanor in Tennessee, or whether it's arrest for first degree murder. It all has to be based on probable cause, and from a constitutional standpoint, that is the constitutional principle involved. So,
okay. If I may ask, have you all tried to mediate this case?
We have, Your Honor. We were not successful. We tried to mediate it prior to the judge ruling on summary judgment.
Have you tried at the circuit court level? We have an excellent mediation office. It would seem perhaps this is something, you know, that could be worked out without extraordinary difficulty.
We have tried to do that. I will say this is a case that has been heavily litigated on both sides. But we have tried to do it. We have not been successful in doing it.
Okay, very well. Thank you for answering my questions.
I would like, we lived in a, it looks like I've got a yellow card being held up here for some time. I would just like to say, if we could, in closing, in my principal argument anyway, that the brief set out all of the information known by the officer, and I've got a red card, so I guess I'll stop.
Okay. You'll have your rebuttal. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much.
We'll hear, I'm not sure who's up next, but that person may proceed.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the court. My name is Hillary Magosh, and I represent defendant appellee Lance Anderson in this matter. And Deputy Anderson would just respectfully ask that the court affirm the lower court's holding and grant a summary judgment to him on all of plaintiff appellant's claims against him. And there are six brief facts that are really crucial to this court's resolution of this matter. The first is that when Deputy Anderson arrived to investigate the unwanted guest call, he observed this crate packed full of cats sitting in Ms. Goodson's driveway. He went inside, talked to Ms. Goodson, and Deputy Brewer remained outside talking to the plaintiff appellant. Ms. Goodson appeared to him to be shaken and upset. She told him that she'd communicated to Ms. Wesser that she didn't want her to come over to her house and drop off the cats, but that's exactly what Ms. Wesser did. The plaintiff appellant admitted that she drove onto Ms. Goodson's property and unloaded the crate of cats on her driveway. Now, a letter was sent to the plaintiff appellant by Ms. Goodson a few days prior to this incident, and the letter instructed Ms. Goodson to contact Loudoun County Friends of Animals volunteer to arrange a time that these volunteers could pick up the cats from the plaintiff appellant. The letter did not in any way state that the plaintiff appellant was to pack up all the cats into a single crate and drive them over to Ms. Goodson's home and deposit them in her driveway.
Okay. You can assume that we know the facts of the case. So it might be best if you just focus on the particular legal arguments you want to emphasize in the time. I know you only have 9 minutes.
Yes, thank you, Your Honor. Well, as to the plaintiff's first argument regarding probable cause under the Fourth Amendment, the plaintiff, as you know, she was arrested for criminal trespass, and that involves entering or remaining on property without the property owner's consent. And in determining probable cause, of course, the court has to look at the totality of the circumstances and must account for an official's ability to make inferences based on his personal experiences. And here, Deputy Anderson had reason to believe, based on the facts and circumstances known to him at the time of arrest, that the plaintiff appellant had entered onto Ms. Goodson's property without her consent. Again, Ms. Goodson had told Deputy Anderson that she communicated to Ms. Wesser that she didn't want her to show up with those cats, and yet that's exactly what Ms. Wesser did.
This is Judge Murphy. Do you think that probable cause is an absolute defense to the state law claims of false imprisonment and false arrest? And the reason why I ask that is because there are criminal cases that suggest in order for an arrest to be lawful for a misdemeanor, and I think you would concede that this is just for a misdemeanor, the misdemeanor has to take place in the officer's presence. And I don't know that that element has been satisfied. So even if there was probable cause, would that be an independent basis to reverse on the state law claims?
So there is this mandatory citation statute, which you mentioned, but there are exceptions to that statute. So it's not as clear cut. So in this case, the exception, and it is found under Tennessee Code Annotated 47-118 subsection C2, it's now actually D2, but at the time of this incident, it was subsection C2. And no citation shall issue if there's a reasonable likelihood that the offense will continue or resume. And so here, Deputy Anderson believed that Ms. Wesser would continue or resume her trespass. The undisputed record shows that she actually left the property, turned around, and then came back and parked outside Ms. Goodson's home. She admitted that she wasn't going to go anywhere until something was done with those cats.
Right. So there's no evidence, is there, that she was going to go back on the property. Your client didn't see her go back on the property. She was just at the curb waiting for Miss Goodson to take the cats in. So how could that be an exception to this rule that the misdemeanor has to be committed in the presence of the officer?
Well, two things, Your Honor. First, again, in assessing objective reasonableness, you have to account for the ability of an officer to make an inference based on his experiences and his knowledge. And here we have Miss Goodson saying she's not going to take those cats in, and she can't because she's got to go to Nashville the next day for a medical appointment. And then you have the plaintiff appellant who has admitted openly that she wasn't going to leave until something was done with the cat. She's worried about these cats. And so the inference that he drew was that she was going to go back onto the property to check on these cats. They're all crammed into a single container and it's cold outside, and Miss Goodson isn't taking the cats inside. She, again, Miss Wesser drove off and then returned to the property. And that was because she wanted to make sure that something was done with the cats. But further, of course, the law in this circuit is clear that officers need probable cause to arrest, but they don't need probable cause to arrest just for the specific crime charged. And so Deputy Anderson testified that he actually could have arrested Ms. Wesser for other crimes, including cruelty to animals. So he had probable cause to do that. And according to its Tennessee Code Annotated 39.14.202 subsection 4, a person commits cruelty to animals if she transports or confines an animal in a cruel manner. So again, here we've got 8 and as many as 18 cats all crammed into a single crate left outside in the cold. And so Deputy Anderson had probable cause to arrest her for cruelty to animals. And that was occurring in his presence. There's the crate sitting in the driveway. And Ms. Wesser had admitted that she drove onto the driveway and unloaded that crate.
Was that a director for that? I'm sorry. Go ahead, Judge.
He didn't arrest her for years speculating now about this cruelty to animals. I mean, that wasn't the charge. It was criminal trespass.
Yes, Your Honor. The charge was criminal trespass. But the law in this circuit is that in terms of probable cause, you need probable cause to arrest, not probable cause to arrest for the specific crime charge. So in other words, he had probable cause to arrest for both crimes. And while he only charged her with the criminal trespass, he could have charged her if he so desired with this cruelty to animals. And he has testified to that
Is that a felony or a misdemeanor?
That is a misdemeanor, Your Honor. And again, it was occurring in his presence. The crate of cats was sitting in the driveway, and Miss Wesser had admitted that she had placed these cats in the driveway, you know, in that condition, in that crate.
As to the state law claim for false arrest, my understanding is that Tennessee, and we've talked about it here, Tennessee law requires that with respect to certain misdemeanors like this one, that the conduct occur in the officer's presence in order for the officer lawfully to arrest the person for that conduct. That did not happen here with regard to the trespass. And so why hasn't the plaintiff put forth evidence creating a genuine issue as to the state law claim for false arrest?
Again, Your Honor, an exception to that rule, to the mandatory citation rule, is that the trespass would continue or resume. So we believe that Deputy Anderson did have the ability to arrest Miss Wesser based on the fact that she would continue or resume her trespass onto Miss Goodson's property in order to take care of those cats.
Okay. You have a case you can cite us that supports your position that this particular exception applies?
I do, Your Honor. It's an unreported case. It's State versus Hardin, and I have the specific citation. It's 2015 Westlaw 3794588, and it was Tennessee Court of Criminal Appeals, June 12th, 2015. And I do have a red card, so I will stop here. Thank you very much.
Very good. Thank you for your argument. We'll hear from Ms. Pemberton.
You got to unmute.
Unmute.
Okay, I'm sorry, Your Honors.
There you go.
May it please the court, my name is Dana Pemberton and I represent the defendant Kimberly Goodson on this appeal. In addition to the necessary requirement that there be a lack of probable cause, the district court was proper in granting summary judgment for Ms. Goodson. Two additional reasons. Number one is, as a general rule, a private citizen is not liable under any of the theories that the plaintiff is alleging. And number two, as a general rule, under any theory, a private citizen notifying an officer of a potential crime does not subject the private citizen to liability. Under the Muldawan case, section 1983 begins with the general rule that a private citizen is not liable under section 1983. And in order for a private citizen to be liable, there are three tests that must be met. One is the public function test, where a citizen is basically exercising control typically reserved for that of the state. There are no facts to support that test in this case. Number two, the state compulsion test, where the state essentially compels the citizen to act in a certain way that is essentially on its behalf, and there are no facts to support that in this case. And three is the nexus test, to where there is such a close relationship between the private citizen and the state that essentially the private citizen is an actor of the state. And in this particular case, not only was there not a close relationship between Mrs. Goodson and the officer Anderson, there was no relationship at all. The two had never met and did not know one another.
Well, let me ask you this. Your client did, according to the plaintiff, exaggerate the facts, did she not?
My client reported facts that she believed to be true. The plaintiff takes issue with some facts, such as she wasn't intoxicated. But my client received a call from another citizen saying that she was, and that they had to call the police on her earlier. And the officer, however, did not find that she was intoxicated. So under Cohen versus Ferguson, under the Tennessee state law case, even if you believe facts to be true, then a citizen can report those. And even if they appear to be false under Sykes versus Anderson, and that's a Sixth Circuit case, the false facts have to be necessary for the finding of probable cause. So a lot of the facts that the plaintiff is asserting that were incorrect or inaccurate were not necessary for the officer's finding of probable cause. If you look at the undisputed facts in this case, the plaintiff went to the Mrs. Goodson's home after being told not to. Mrs. Goodson never housed the cats at her home. Mrs. Goodson, in her letter, said that there were arrangements to be made with a third party, not with Miss Goodson, to pick up the cats on various dates, not specifically November the 7th. So what transpired here was that the plaintiff said she decided, that's what the plaintiff said in her brief and in her affidavit, she decided to go to Miss Goodson's house that night. Miss Goodson made clear she was not welcome to come. And those are the undisputed facts. So the other facts were not necessary. The Tennessee statute states that if you enter someone's property without consent or any portion of the person's property without consent, that is a trespass. And Mrs. Goodson is coming from a place of a private citizen. And an error by the officer and how the officer conducted his investigation or what choice the officer made with regard to an arrest does not render the private citizen liable for liability. So long as the officer is acting under the officer's professional independent judgment, which undisputedly in this case he was, there's absolutely no proof that the officer was acting other than his independent judgment. Undisputedly, Mrs. Goodson did not ask or coerce the officer to do anything with respect to the plaintiff in this case. And under federal law or state law, there is no liability on a private citizen under those facts, the undisputed facts.
I understand. I mean, it seems strange. I mean, though, according to the plaintiff, your client called her a crazy woman, that she was sitting in our driveway with a gun in her car. She was drunk off her butt. I mean, they obviously didn't get along very well, did they?
They did not. They did not, which also makes it reasonable for Mrs. Goodson to call the police to intervene when someone has dropped cats off at her house when she has told her not to and is remaining at the bottom of her driveway. It is reasonable for a citizen to then get assistance from the police. And for public policy purposes, a citizen should be able to report an incident to the police and to speak freely. Without fear of personal liability. And in this particular case, the officer and the citizen did not know one another. So the citizen, in this case, Mrs. Goodson, simply reported the facts as she knew them to be. And under federal law or under the state law, she is not subject to liability under any theory. Under malicious prosecution, the private citizen would have to exercise some control or coercion in the prosecution, and the fact that he's devoid of that.
Okay, thank you very much for your argument. We'll hear rebuttal from Mr. Alleman.
Thank you, Judge Kessler. A few things. First of all, a citizen should be free to report crimes or whatever to the police, but a citizen should not be free, and under state law anyway, a citizen is not free to make false statements and inflammatory misrepresentations to an officer, have that officer partly rely on it, and then not be liable for those false and inflammatory misrepresentations. But that not only is that improper under state law, but we think that is circumstantial evidence of intent and motive on the part of Ms. Goodson. We also think that the officer's clear abdication of his responsibility to do an appropriate investigation, clearly in summary judgment record, his first words to Ms. Wesser were not, "How are you, ma'am? What's going on, ma'am? Why are you here, ma'am?" His first words to her were, "You are under arrest."
We understand that look at from the facts. Answer specifically, the counsel for Anderson says there's an exception to this. You can't arrest someone for a misdemeanor not in your presence. She says, well, because of continuing or trespass. Is that a valid defense?
Judge Gilman, what's I'm sure mistakenly being done here is that Officer Anderson is conflating two different statutes. There's the mandatory citation statute, which is 47118B1A, which says basically that an officer is required to cite, and then there are several exceptions. There's that statute, but the officer has no authority, that arrest authority does not come from that statute. Arrest authority comes from TCA 40-7-103A1. That statute says that an officer has no authority to arrest for a misdemeanor not committed in the officer's presence. Now, that statute also does contain some other exceptions. For instance, an officer can arrest based upon an investigation for a car wreck that he didn't see and was not present for. An officer can arrest for a DUI where he was not present for, but his investigation shows probable cause. There are some exceptions like that, but those exceptions, none of those exceptions, undisputedly, none of these exceptions in 47-103A1 applies.
Can I stop you and ask just a general question, since, I mean, these are common law torts, they're not statutory causes of action. And I looked at the two main cases on the common law torts of false imprisonment and false arrest, and both of them seem to suggest that probable cause was an absolute defense to this type of claim. I recognize that the statute suggests that for purposes of maybe criminal cases, arrest for a misdemeanor outside the officer's presence might be illegal. But do you have a do you have a case in Tennessee that allowed a false arrest or false imprisonment claim civilly to proceed where there everybody agreed that probable cause existed, but the claim was that the arrest was illegal because it was for a misdemeanor outside the officer's presence?
I'm trying to, what I will say, Judge Murphy, is if you will allow it, we would be happy to submit a letter with I have it in my head, we may have a case, but I don't have it right here in front of me.
Okay, so what my question then is, what do we do if the law is unclear? Because I looked at just across the country and just did a general survey, and it seems like the common law rule was to allow this type of false arrest claim to proceed on these facts, but it also seems like in other jurisdictions, probable cause could be an absolute defense. So I guess when the law is unclear, we're supposed to predict how Tennessee courts would apply it.
What I would say is this, the law is not that the law is unclear, but it does, the false arrest, if you find probable cause, false arrest and false imprisonment, you still got to find was the arrest reasonably objective under the Tennessee mandatory citation statute. So was a custodial, the question is, was a custodial arrest, even if there was probable cause for false arrest and false imprisonment, was a custodial arrest objectively reasonable under the Tennessee mandatory citation statute? That's the analysis, I think.
Thank you, sir, for your arguments. If there are no further questions, the case will be submitted, and the clerk may call the next case.